Today is November 19th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
The top story this week, well, the only story, really, the only one worth talking about from the week, Microsoft released Zune. One thing is for sure, Microsoft has gotten way more press than any other iPod competitor to date. So is the player any good? Is it going to present real competition for the iPod? Why are people writing about it when no one seems to be buying it? That's the context machine. First, we need the fodder. Jeff, hit it.
Okay, Microsoft Zune Media Player hit store shelves on Tuesday, but consumers don't seem to be showing much interest. Manhattan's Midtown Best Buy store sold only about 20 units in the first 3 hours they were available, according to Fox News.
Now, is that good? I mean, what does that mean? Thank you, Fox News.
Yeah, and the Times Square Virginia megastore in New York City, they didn't even have any of the players. But it wasn't a big deal since no one was asking for them. Employees were the only people near the product display all morning long. And despite the general disinterest in the Zune, it isn't likely to go away. Microsoft plans to stick with the product long-term in an effort to dislodge Apple's top dog position with the iPod.
The conventional wisdom, with which Microsoft has not disagreed at all, is that Zune is going to be a slow starter, but through superior marketing, distribution, and partnership deals, will ultimately outmaneuver the iPod to gain market share.
Now, Microsoft did find at least one buyer on Tuesday that was looking for a non-Apple player. Donna Murphy purchased a Zune simply because it's not an iPod. And her reasoning, I'm not an Apple fan, not an iPod fan, so I wanted to try something different. Brilliant, Donna.
Meanwhile, Microsoft's CEO Steve Ballmer was doing a PR lap, not surprising. Apparently, he thinks that the Zune Media Player can knock Apple's iPod out of its dominant position. I'm just astonished that he would ever say such a thing to the press. Separately from its PR efforts, Microsoft is working to buy friends in the recording industry, too. Last week, the company announced a deal that gives Universal Music Group a cut from every Zune sold. Now, Microsoft is offering to sign similar deals with other labels.
Which means that, thanks to Donna, Universal made at least $1 last week. And one last thing to point out about the Zune, its feature set. It's matched in price with Apple's 30-gig iPod at $250. It has a screen with the same resolution, but bigger pixels, so the screen size is bigger. It has Wi-Fi, which the iPod does not, and has a novel social networking feature. It does not have a handful of iPod features like games, notes, contacts, calendars, things like that.
Now, it just so happens that as Zune hits store shelves, Apple managed to get some press reminding everyone that market lock-in is working in the iPod's favor. Apple is teaming up with Air France, Continental, Delta, Emirates, KLM, and United Airlines to add in-flight iPod entertainment systems to airplanes. Starting apparently in mid-2007, at least according to this announcement, passengers will be able to take advantage of built-in iPod chargers at their seats, and the connectors will allow them to view iPod video on the seatback displays in the airplane.
Now, more immediately, the iPod is expected to crush the Zune this holiday season. In fact, it's expected to be the best-selling item, period. That's according to a Channel Checker survey, which included major electronic retailers in North America and Western Europe. The retailers put the Sony PlayStation 3 and Nintendo Wii right behind the iPod, with 20% of the companies saying they will be the top sellers. And Microsoft's Xbox also fared well, with 15% of the retailers mentioning it.
Hey, Microsoft, I've heard of them. If nothing else, The survey at least indicates that retailers are putting a lot of faith in iPod sales. If prior holiday seasons are any indication, they won't be let down. If prior holiday sales are a misleading indication, well, we'll be hearing about that in January. And lastly, for the fodder, I just can't stay away from this particular story. It's a sign of weakness, I know, but according to the latest rumors, Hunhai Precision Industry Company Limited has been awarded contracts from Apple Computer to manufacture the, wait for it, iPhone. According to Forbes, which is in turn culling from a Commercial Times article, Honhai is to build 12 million mobile phone handsets that are also portable music players. Supposedly, Apple's mobile phone is scheduled to be launched in the second half of 2007. Honhai already builds some iPod models for Apple. Earlier this year, the company was the focus of that sweatshop story that we spent some time on. For now, some questions to consider. One, can Apple possibly expect to sell 12 million iPhones in the first run of the product? Two, is it possible that, quote, mobile handsets that also function as music players, which are the words used in the Forbes article, are not actually iPhones? I mean, those words do, after all, apply to my crappy Motorola phone. I'm just saying. I'm not holding my breath. All right, that's enough of that. Let's get into the Context Machine. And like I said, we're talking about the Zune. This is a really interesting story for a number of reasons for anyone that watches Apple or watches this. The mobile media industry in particular, because there's a lot of stuff going on here, but I want to start, like we often do, with the basics here. Jeff, you've spent some time with the Zune. You went to a store, and you tell us a little bit about that experience. What happened? What did you see when you were there? What's the product like?
Well, it started off in an interesting fashion, like these things often do. I went to the CompUSA, that's in Westminster, Colorado, and went up to the counter where they have all the MP3 players. There's no Zune. So I asked an employee if they have one to look at, and they said, oh, yeah, there's a display, and they point off to the side. The Zune display that Microsoft had designed is so poor that I walked right past it to go talk to this guy to ask to see a Zune. That's how bad it is. So I turn around and go back to the end cap where they have this display set up, and they have these Fort Knox quality brackets holding Zune mock-ups. So you can't even steal the crappy fake mock-up that they have, which also means you can't get an idea for the heft, for how well it fits your hand, any of that. So that was very disappointing. There was a sticker on the display that said if you wanted to test a Zune, go back to the MP3 player counter. So I did, and ultimately what came out of it was I'm asking employees for a Zune, and they're going, I don't know if we ever got any. So and as it turns out, they had just received a few the night before, and keep in mind, the Zune came out on Tuesday. It's Saturday. I'm the first person that came into the store asking about the Zune. So how bad is that?
Yeah. So with all of that in mind, you go back, they crack one open for you, and you start to play with it. Tell us a little bit about the player. What happened while you were actually, you know, using it and tooling around with it?
Well, my first impression was, why did they let the product out? Because, okay, that sounds really bad, but it's true. They hand me this Zune, and it's like this big blocky bar of soap feeling thing. And it's substantially bigger than a first generation iPod. And it didn't fit in my hand very well. And I don't have the biggest hands in the world. So even with my smaller hands, I found that little D-pad click ring wheel thingy to be unwieldy and cumbersome and too small. And I found every time I'd click at one of the button points on it, which would be at like 12, 3, 6, and 9 if it was a clock, I was also bumping into the center wheel or button. And a lot of times I was actually clicking both at the same time. And it might just be that I need to work on my dexterity, but that ring was too small to use as an effective navigation tool, at least for me.
All right. Now, one of my questions here, just practically speaking, I've read a couple reviews as people have. David Pogue, we linked to one of his reviews in one of the articles. And he and some other people have said, you know, it's different. You know, the interface is a little bit different. In some cases, it's not quite as good. In some cases, it's just fine. In some cases, it's actually kind of clever. One of my questions is, particularly on the Mac web, you're likely to hear, oh, this thing is an awful user experience. Is it really harder to use than an iPod, or is that just our iPod prejudice talking?
Actually, I found it to be substantially more difficult to use than an iPod. And that, now, there are some nice interface elements. And one of the things that I liked was that when you would select a menu and it would take you into a different part of the interface, it did this kind of neat thing where the menus would pass over each other as one's getting smaller and the other's bigger, and they fade through each other. And it's like maybe a second long. So it's a really fast and subtle transition, but it did look really nice. And they also are doing a nice thing where the highlighted menu item, it has this bar that goes completely across the display, and it fades out at one end, and it fades out with transparency. So you have the nice effect of being able to see the image that's underneath and acting as like a desktop picture type thing. So there's some really nice elements in the interface, but overall, I found that it was difficult to navigate through, mainly because of the little click button thing that they include. It's too small. It's way too close to the bottom of the device. I couldn't use it one-handed without fear of dropping the entire thing.
Yeah, now that is a big deal. One-handed and is clearly a major issue when you're talking about one of these players.
Oh, yeah. And as I was playing with the device, and of course, this is the first one that any of the employees at the CompUSA had seen, and they were all huddling around me, and they wanted to hear everything I had to say about it, so I was giving them a on-the-fly analysis of the device, and they were all quite surprised when I said, I don't feel comfortable using this one-handed. And so I had to hold it in one hand and do all the navigation with my other hand before I felt comfortable even having it in my presence. So yeah, that's going to be a big problem for a lot of people, especially because an iPod is very easy to use one-handed.
All right. Now, that's some discussion about the functionality, and if people want to learn more about that, clearly there are no shortage of opinions on that subject. Let's get into some of the broader context here and talk about the industry. Microsoft seems to be making pretty sure, and Microsoft, as we've discussed on this show in the past, seems to be very, very good at making sure that the media industries want to see the Zune succeed. The best example of that, and we mentioned it just moments ago, Universal is getting a cut of every player, every Zune player that gets sold. Perfect example. A brilliant, in a sense, it's a brilliant industry deal, right? Get the music industry on your side. Make the music industry say, we want people to be buying Zunes and not iPods. So surely that will strain Apple's relationships with the music and movie industry, if those can even have more strain piled onto them, because they seem pretty strained as they are. But how about consumer behavior? Is there any chance that because Universal Music wants people to buy Zunes rather than iPods, that consumers are going to change their behavior?
I don't think consumers are going to change their behavior based on the quality of the Zune product today. If this is the best Microsoft has to offer, it's not going to sell. And one of the things I told the employees as I left the store, I said, that inventory of Zunes you have on the shelf, you'll be counting them with your next product inventory next year. And they laughed, but you could tell it was the uncomfortable laughter of, yeah, we're afraid you're right. No, I think that Universal striking their deal with Microsoft will add some more pressure to the consumer through marketing to purchase Zune players. But if you look at all the other products that have hit the market, including what the Zune is built on, the Toshiba Gigabeat, it doesn't matter how much marketing you're putting behind those products, everyone is going back to the iPod because the overall product and experience is superior.
In a sense, consumers are kind of put in the position of having to defend their product choice time and time again after they purchase it. I mean, it's not like a lot of electronics where you take them home and then they either work or they don't, and if they don't work, they end up on a shelf. With your music player, you're using it, you know, every day on the bus or on the subway or on an airplane, and so people look at you and they say, well, what's that? And you say, oh, it's this thing. And then they pull out their iPod and they say, well, hey, how does it work? And you have to, you know, discuss it. And it's kind of, right. It's one of those things where if it doesn't work right, if it doesn't please the consumer, if it doesn't function the way that consumers are expecting, it seems like there's much more pressure to take whatever the mainstream product is. I want to, talking about the mainstreamness of the iPod, there's this accessories lock-in that's building around the iPod. Car installation is a huge thing, cases and FM transmitters and all this other stuff. And now airline interfaces that you'll be able to watch your own movies on the air on an airline using your iPod. Let's talk a little bit about the degree of that lock-in. I would say, you know, to the lowest order, lock-in is just a perk for the owners of that device. You know, if you own an iPod, well, hey, there's all this iPod economy out there that you can tap into. As the lock-in gets stronger and stronger, it becomes a real selling point for the product. People say, oh, I'm choosing this product because there are all these accessories or all this extended functionality. Eventually, it becomes a penalty to buying other products. Where in that range are we right now? Is the lock-in so severe that there's a penalty to buying a Zune?
I would say yes. I think we've already hit the point where buying anything other than an iPod is a penalty in one fashion or another, simply because the accessories for all the other products aren't there like they are for an iPod. And now that we're having the car interfaces and the airline deal, I mean, the iPod has become a ubiquitous item, which is great for Apple and for their competition, not so great. But until someone creates something that's better than the iPod is, I don't think we're going to see any of these peripheral companies like car manufacturers, airplane manufacturers, and other companies looking to other products to add functionality with. I mean, this is like an unprecedented thing. I mean, when was the last time we had a consumer product like this become so popular that you have unrelated industries figuring out how to add in the technology to let you use that product?
All right, now let's ask back up one step more. One of the things I'm curious about here, Apple right now is on top of this market, and particularly when you read the Mac Web, everyone says they're going to steamroll everything that's out there. Always very easy to say when someone's already on top of the market. Right now, people talk about how hip and cool the iPod is. Great. If Apple stays on top of this market, can it continue to carry that banner of hippest, coolest device in this market? I mean, can you hold that banner, the coolest product on the market, without being an underdog?
Sony did it with the Walkman. And I don't think anyone considered Sony an underdog at any point. Well, maybe now, but that's because they can't keep computers from blowing up. But no, you don't have to be the underdog. And this story with Apple coming from behind and everyone throwing beleaguered around with Apple's name, and then all of a sudden the iPod becomes the shining star. You know, it's like a Cinderella story, and everyone's going, hooray, the underdog became the big guy. And of course now we have the people that are going, hey, they're the big guy. I don't like the big guy. They suck. You'll always have that. But I think by and large, you can have these companies that are making excellent products, and the product will stand on its own. And the iPod, if it was exactly what it is with the iTunes store and everything, and it came from a different company, I think the odds of the product being what it is today are still very good. It just so happens that it was Apple that had the vision and the drive and the talent to produce this product.
Fair enough. There are a couple of other things that I want to point people toward before we wrap this up. There is in this David Pogue article the review that I mentioned earlier, he says something very interesting at the end. He says, right now, this is a game for watching, not for playing. Would you agree with that statement?
I think that's a pretty safe statement right now. I think what we'll see, I don't think we really need a crystal ball right now to see how this is going to play out over the next couple years. Apple will remain the dominant player in this market. Now, over time, we may see some changes, like John Martellaro, in one of his Hidden Dimensions columns, mentioned that Microsoft might be working to wear down market and completely commoditize the players.
Yeah. Well, and there is, that was one of the other things that I wanted to ask you about. If Microsoft is in this market, it's clear that they're going to be here to fight. I mean, they are really going to fight for market share. They're going to market the hell out of this product. One of the overtones in John Martello's article from this week was, if Microsoft relentlessly markets this product, and the product is never really exceptional, and people never say, oh, this thing just knocks my socks off, but they continue to push it, so it's always in the public mind, people always know it's an option, then it kind of insulates itself from tripping up, right? Because it's always there, people always expect, oh yeah, it's the Microsoft thing, I could always go and get that. And so if Apple ever does manage to trip up or drop the ball, or they, you know, are late on an upgrade cycle, or there's some problem, then people will move over to the Zune. And once they're there, they'll say, ah, why go back to the iPod?
Sure, that's always a possibility. And who knows, we may see that happen someday. Microsoft did a really good job marketing and pushing Windows, and what they did was they created this mentality that we don't have with the iPod right now. And the mentality is, I just need good enough. And that's what you get with Windows. I mean, it's good enough to get the computer to boot and run some applications. Yeah, there's some issues and there's some problems and headaches, but you know, it's good enough to get the job done. And I think that's what they would like to see in the portable media player market. But right now, the mentality for the consumer is, I don't want good enough. I want the best experience I can get. And that's what iPod and iTunes gives me today.
Plus, of course, there's all that lock-in that we talked about before, and not just with accessories, but also with the music that you purchased, for example, from the iTunes Music Store.
Right, which is much easier to do than purchasing music from the Zune Marketplace.
And that final zinger, we're running out of time, but that's going to have to be the last word. Nice way to get another jab in there, Jeff. Nicely done.
Thank you very much.
If you have any thoughts, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. I was going to say that means it's probably about time for us to slide on into the product roundup. And with that, we might as well start by talking about the microphone I'm using today.
All right, yeah, and those of you that listen to the Mac Geek Gab, you might have heard a show that John and Dave did from the Podcast Expo in September. I was a guest on that show, and we talked about the Mac Pro that I record this show on and did some other stuff. But we used a really interesting little USB mic to record that show, and since Jeff is reviewing our USB mics, he's holding on to that now. Why don't you tell us what that thing is, what it looks like, what it, you know, just describe this microphone to us.
Okay, today I'm using the Snowball from Blue, and to give you an idea of what it looks like, anyone that saw Star Wars, where C-3PO has to go visit Jabba the Hutt's palace, and the little eyeball robot sticks out of the door before he gets to come in, that's what this looks like.
That is the most esoteric way you could have described it. You could have just said, it looks like a snowball.
Well, it kind of does, but it looks like the little robot eyeball from, I'm sorry, it's not Star Wars, it was Empire Strike. No, it was Return of the Jedi. Wow, uh-huh. This really, that tells a lot about me, doesn't it?
All right, so it looks like the robot that comes out of the door at Jabba the Hutt's palace in Return of the Jedi.
Yes, it does. And it also has a little bit of a retro look to it. Instead of having the nice sleek lines that you see on a lot of products, it has the rounded edges to the grill pieces, and it has a logo that looks like it's out of the 30s on it. And so it's this really interesting mixture of techno and retro all in one little thing, with apparently a splash of Star Wars thrown in for good measure.
It's all right. And it is just briefly some technology stuff on it. It's a condenser mic, so USB powered condenser mic, and it does have multiple patterns. Right now, Jeff is using it on that cardioid shape, the unidirectional shape, but it can do an omnidirectional. It can, like the other mic he was using, that Samson CO3U, it can pick up in a full circle. And Blue, one other comment on Blue. Blue makes microphones from this microphone, for example, is $160 list price. I saw it on sale as I was checking prices, maybe at Musician's Friend for $100. So that's a sort of consumer level solid microphone. But they make microphones that cost, up to $2,000, and Blue makes has a tremendous reputation in the recording business for making really interesting sounding microphones. And so they're definitely pulling down technology from the other stuff that they make. Jeff, what's your reaction to the setup, to the, how you, once you got the box, what was the process for getting it plugged in?
It was just as easy as setting up the Samson, and I took it out of the box. I plugged in a USB cable, plugged it into my Mac, and it was there. Simple as that. And the one thing I didn't like, though, actually, is the stand that it ships with, which, by the way, that's a nice feature. It ships with a stand, whereas the Samson does not. So, as it turns out, when I first started using the Samson, I didn't have a mic stand. So right before we started the podcast, I ran down to Guitar Center, bought a stand, and they were amazingly helpful and set it up for me, built it so that all I had to do was run back and plug in the microphone. This one, I didn't have to deal with that. All I had to do was attach the microphone to the little stand that it comes with, and I was done. The problem is the stand feels just a little bit wobbly to me. And it has a little gooseneck so that you can raise or lower the microphone a few inches, but it's actually difficult to make sure that you have that neck tight so that it doesn't slide. And the first time I had it together and it was ready to start testing, with that the microphone drops in the stand all the way to the shortest position it could go to, which scared me, is the nice way to put it. And so it actually took a little while for me to get the stand so it was tightened correctly and I'd have the microphone facing the right direction so everything was balanced. Once that was done, it's okay. But even still, here I am using the Blue on the stand that it comes with, and I'm worried about bumping the table too hard. So, but it also uses standard thread attachments. So I could put this onto the mic stand that I already have and use it that way if I want.
Fair enough. Yeah, and it's interesting. As soon as you there was one other issue. We had to get a firmware update for it. Presumably, if you buy them new from Blue, this isn't an issue. But there are two firmwares that you can get for it. One for really loud applications, like if you're using it to mic, an electric guitar amp, then you want to have the firmware that this thing arrived with. If you're using it for talking, which is a relatively quiet activity, you want to use the higher gain firmware, and that's we had to update that, and then we were like, hey, we got signal out of Jeff's voice. So one other thing, just talking about the sound, because that is at the end of the day one of the most important things, along with, I suppose, price and functionality and whether or not it fits into the audio interface that you want to use, whether it's USB or something else. But I think, and Jeff, tell me if you feel differently. I think that you sound terrific on this microphone. I think you sound, frankly, a lot better than on that Samson.
Well, for what I've done with the microphone so far, I can hear a little bit of a difference, but it might also have something to do with the crappy headphones I'm using today.
Well,
so I will trust you on that one.
It's also difficult to say because you're coming in over Skype, and people will notice when they're listening to this, there have been a fair number of hiccups in the connection. But it's a really nice sound. The Samson mic was fine. It had a clear sound. You could hear stuff clearly. There wasn't a problem. It wasn't muddy. It wasn't a crummy sound. But it was way harsher than the sound that I hear coming in right now. For example, and the best way for people to compare this is go back, you know, to the last show or a couple shows before that, and listen to Jeff's S's. The S's come through really harshly, and it sounds like it's this really unpleasant sound. And it's not Jeff's fault. It's apparently the fault of the microphone, and hearing it now on the Snowball, he sounds great. All of that, I said sibilance on the show either last week or the week before, and then I realized the word is actually sibilance. So thank you, everyone, for not writing in and telling me that I didn't know how to speak English. But your sibilance sounds much better on
Excellent.
This microphone than on the last one.
Now, my computer that I do the podcasting from, it's my 1.67 gigahertz PowerBook G4, and it went under the knife this last week. I found out it was having some serious issues. What I'm going to do is try the Samson again after I get my PowerBook back and see how it performs. Right now I'm actually using an old iBook G4 as the Skype machine, and I noticed an immediate performance difference in the Samson microphone when I used it on the iBook G4 and when I used it on a 2 gigahertz MacBook Pro. So there's a possibility some of the issues we had with the Samson microphone had to do with my computer and not the microphone.
Now those, I would guess, if there's an issue, that it would be mostly less in the sound and more in the delay. Was there a bad delay using it on the PowerBook?
No, it wasn't really the delay, although we did talk about it briefly at one point, which is that the input level of the microphone was changing of its own accord.
Ah, right.
And I could actually watch that in the sound preference pane, but it doesn't do that on the MacBook Pro or the iBook. So that leads me to believe that part of the problem was my computer.
Well, fair enough. And so we can relieve that criticism of the CO3U from last week's show. Yeah, go check these things out. Right now, if I had to tip one way or the other, I'd say I really like the way you sound on this. But we're going to keep looking at it. We're going to keep looking at more microphones. One other comment about the mic we talked about last week, the SM7B. I'm using it again this week. There's a switch in the back that lets you either put in or take out a bump in the sort of upper mid frequencies. It's supposed to make your voice a little bit clearer or a little bit more audible. It gets a little woolier when you turn it off. Last week I had it on. This week I have it off. And my suspicion is that I'm going to like it a little bit. I have to go back and listen. I think I probably like it a little more this way. It sounded kind of harsh to me last week, but, the real issue here, this microphone I've decided is probably not the right choice for most podcasters, unless you happen to have a preamp with a lot of juice. This thing, has the SM7B made by Shure. It has a pretty low output, a really low output, and I'm using this M-Audio FireWire 410, which is not a terribly saucy preamp. It's not capable of boosting the signal very much before it starts to distort or before it starts to get a lot of noise on the line. So I would say, unless you know that you have a preamp that's really good and can get a lot of signal, I wouldn't look at this microphone. It's just not. It's too much work to get the signal out of it and make sure that everything sounds good. So I'd probably stay away from this thing, and we'll talk about some other ones later. And I suppose that's enough talk of microphones for now.
Probably. I bet there's one or two people that their eyes are bleeding right now saying, please tell me about something else.
All right. Well, let's do that. I'll start off here. GigaWiz announced the immediate availability of its new graphing application, Citrin 1.0, earlier this week. It includes common charts like bar, column, area, 3D, pie, scatter, and line, and it supports working with multiple worksheets, exporting to several graphic formats, and importing data from Excel, ASCII 2, Fortran format, and binary numeric matrix. Those were a lot of words. Citrin 1.0 is available for download at the GigaWiz website. It costs $120 US.
And just so you know, I'm very proud of you. Those were lots of big words with lots of syllables. Go, Ricky. Okay. Lightcraft's released version 2 of LightZone, a digital photographer's editing and imaging management application. And in addition to universal binary support, the new version adds an integrated digital darkroom, improved zone mapper and tone mapper tools, image batch processing, image editing templates, and improved camera raw support. It costs $250.
Freeverse announced Wednesday the release of Big Bang Brain Games, a suite of 6 games designed to stimulate the cerebellum, cajole the cortex, and gratify the gray matter. That's their words. The suite includes Sudoku, Reaction, Remembrance, Echo, Nova Sweeper, and Thalassi, and all our puzzle and memory games. In addition, Freeverse has built in support for .Mac that allows users to create their own brain page via the service.
Okay, and I just have to add to that. At the Central TMO Towers here, we've been playing the Reaction game from Big Bang Brain Games, and it is stunningly addictive. So thank you, Freeverse, for totally taking away all of our free time. PodJournals announced Wednesday a beta release of a social networking service centered around podcasting. The beta version of PodJournals is free to try, and the company also released a macOS 10 version of its client software. PodJournals is aiming its service at people interested in developing or following podcasts for and from friends. It is designed to work with Apple's forthcoming ITV product, as well as with iPods or any computer-based podcasting viewing software.
Zofunk Products finally announced the immediate availability. Not that they did it finally. This is the final thing in the product roundup. Just wanted to clear that up. Zofunk Products announced the immediate availability of its KeyGuard keyboard covers for Apple's MacBook and MacBook Pro on Wednesday. The KeyGuard is a molded silicone keyboard cover that you can leave on while typing. It is available in transparent uninks or clear, and it is washable. The KeyGuard protector is priced starting at $21, and I am so, so sorry for us. And our behavior at the in this latter part of the show.
Yeah, well, there you have it. And that's the news. So thanks for listening to Weekly Roundup.
Our content is written by the good people of the Mac Observer, and our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO, and that's all I've got.
And despite the way we've acted today, stay subscribed.
Until next week, we will see you online.